Raise your hand if you want your nails to look perfect all the time. Me too. I'm Sarah Gibson Tuttle from Olive & June, and this is exactly why we created the Manny System. We wanted to make it possible for everyone everywhere to give themselves a beautiful manicure at home. With our tools and our long-lasting polish, each manicure with our Manny System comes out to just $2. That's right, $2. No more $30, $40, $50 manis that you get at a salon and they take hours. Now you can paint your nails on your time and love them more than ever. And by the way, when people ask, who did your nails? Where did you get them done? You're going to proudly say, I did them myself. Get 20% off your first Manny System with code DIYNAIL20 at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20. That's code DIYNAIL20 for 20% off at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
You are listening to episode 147 of the God Center Mom podcast with me, Heather McFadden. And today I'm chatting with designer, author, amazing gal, Erin Lochner, about chasing slow.
And it's that discontent. You know, happiness cannot be the goal. I don't even feel like slow living can be the goal or fast living can be the goal. Anytime that we place this attainable metric on our life, we are in danger, you know, of measuring it to a T. Life cannot be measured. It just can't. I feel like it's an art, not a science. And so it became so evident to me that happiness was not going to be an arrival point or a destination, and that it was just this everyday tangible choice I had to make to rise above my circumstances that, no, I did not choose, but I found myself in deciding to love and be loved anyway.
Have you ever considered the pace of your life? Maybe you're a young mom and your pace is dictated by your children and you feel like you're just going by their needs. But then maybe you're a mom who works outside the home and you're feeling overly full by too much, too many things at work, too many things from friends, too many things from husband and kids. Or maybe you do stay home and you feel like it is too slow compared to the career you had before. Well, today's guest, Erin Lochner, has written so well on this topic in her book, Chasing Slow. It arrived in my door and I get a lot of books, but this one, y'all, she's amazing. She's this designer. She had an HGTV show, and her book shows all of the skills that she has. It's gorgeous, and her writing has been a guide to me. I've kept her book by my bedside table and read it slowly the last few months, and it has been such a help in a season where I would tell you if I had coffee with you in August, September, October, and you'd ask me how I'm doing, I would have said my life is full. Every little inch of it felt overfull. So many commitments, so many places to be and do, even my weekends and my Sundays, and there was no real Sabbath rest for me. And I've been kind of forced into it by my situation with my parents moving in with us and just choosing to be fully present with family and to let go of the things that don't really matter that I had put a lot of energy and time into. And Her words have been a salve, too, as she's talked about the struggle with her husband, who was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and moving from L.A. to the Midwest to care for her father-in-law, who was ill. And, you know, so much of our conversation, I think, is about the balance of motherhood and career and success and what does that mean. And so if you're that woman who struggles through some of those issues, I'm hoping our conversation can help guide you and direct you so that ultimately you can seek God's pace for your life and that you can find contentment in that. So let's get right to my conversation with Erin. Here we go. Hey, Erin, welcome to the God Center Mom podcast.
Thank you, Heather. I'm so happy to be here. I love, love, love this podcast.
Well, you are very sweet, and we all thank you for writing your new book, Chasing Slow. Amazing. Amazing. I've already gushed over y'all before I got on the call. But if y'all aren't familiar with Erin, and Erin, would you introduce yourself to everyone listening and introduce them to your family a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. I'm Erin Lochner. I am a writer and stylist in the Midwest. I have a blog called designformankind.com. My family is my husband, Ken, and two kids. My daughter, Bee, is, we call her Bee. She's 4 and a half. And then we just adopted a little baby who we call Scout, and he's dreamy.
Oh, how long ago? I had no idea.
I know. It happened literally overnight. He's 4 months now. We've had him since day two.
Wow.
So it's still fairly new. Thank you. If I sound sleep deprived, it's because I am.
You're launching a book and you just adopted a baby.
I know. Timing is crazy, you know, but it's been a whirlwind journey and a really great, it happened in the right way for us in that I tend to overthink things. So it was kind of just like, boom, you have no time to think about this. Just get in there, do it. Like this was meant for you.
Wow. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've been on quite the journey, Why don't you kind of give us not a quick synopsis. I don't want you to be quick. I want you to take your time, but tell us about where you were and how you got here. A little bit of that.
Yeah. Okay. So I grew up in the Midwest. I met a man who I wanted to marry in college named Ken, who had just been diagnosed with a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. So I will say right now he is okay. He is thriving. He is healthy and energetic and has been blessed in numerous ways. But he was given a very short lifespan by the doctor. So we got second and third opinions, decided to take the plunge and marry anyway. I mean, marriage has so many question marks as it is. So it was just like, well, what's one more?
Wow. So but it's a lot. You choosing to marry a man that you are told by doctors would live, I think you said in your book, like rounding up 12 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Which, you know, I feel like was exactly where my journey began. I had to really, you know, when you try and map out your life path or whatever, it's kind of that rarely do you get that moment that kind of creates a before and after. And this really was that moment, even though it wasn't even my own life. It was just choosing to love someone that, I mean, none of us are guaranteed any time at all, but it was choosing someone knowing that you're going to be building a life that will soon likely disappear, you know? And that's a really scary thought. And it taught me a lot. It gave me absolutely 100% the perspective that I have now, which is you live today and you get today, and it's a gift and not a given. And that needs to be enough for us. We need to see that as enough. So,
and to let your heart fully love.
Gosh, yeah.
That would be a really hard thing for me. Like, to fully embrace that relationship, to fully fall into this marriage, knowing that the more I do, the more hurt I'm going to have.
And I will say I did not do that at first. Okay. It has been a long journey. I mean, when we talked about having children, it was very much a, I'm not ready. And I feel like maybe in the back of my mind, I was waiting for that expiration date to check off, you know, like, okay, if you've made it this far past the 10-year mark, well then maybe the doctors were wrong and then yeah, let's do it. And I feel like subconsciously, maybe that's what I was doing when I just kept feeling that I wasn't ready. But he's doing amazing. He's past the 10-year mark. I'm happy to report he really is thriving. So, it's very much one of those things that it's there. It's under the surface. It's not something that we focus on. We no longer, you know, make decisions based on that question mark, which is a really, it's a really crazy way to live. And it's a really freeing way to live when you're fully reliant on stripping away all of those other things. I mean, there are a million things we can freak out about. I think we're really good at that as people. But when you understand that these temporary things, they matter, but they don't matter. And I think that's a gift of perspective that we've been given through his diagnosis.
But not that, you know, there's this gift that it gave you and joy that you found, but the early years of that, the early years of marriage and y'all moving out of the Midwest, I'm going to jump into your story, out of the Midwest to LA, you personally started experiencing some stress and panic attacks.
Oh, yeah. We were both a mess in different ways. I more so than him, honestly. It was almost like I was the one with the brain tumor. I mean, you feel so, you know, it just, gosh, we both dealt with the early stresses of marriage, which are stressful no matter what. You know, I feel like whatever variable you have, whether you think you married a dying man or you just
are human and selfish and trying to learn
that you're just a newlywed. Newlywed is tough. We did not have that, you know, rainbows and butterflies marriage. And so, and I don't think anybody does, honestly, but, we moved to Los Angeles. It was not a place I could ever see myself living. It was very fast. I struggled to find my place. And I'm a typical Midwest worker bee. So I threw myself into work. He did the same. We climbed ladders at work, you know, we saw less of each other. And, I just kept asking myself, you know, what is my purpose? What am I supposed to be doing? You know, I felt, lost. I felt really lost. Mm-hmm. And the panic attacks. And I think it was, you know, I had never really processed what it meant to kind of take ownership over your life. I had very much always seen life as a series of circumstances that you just kind of accept and move on and that you need to kind of roll through it and let things roll off your back. And this was something that just stuck and I couldn't just power through, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a hard, hard thing to come to terms with, that, this person that I love and chose will likely not be here very long. So I feel like you can only shut those emotions down so deep before you. And you know, that growing up is hard. I was 20. Mm-hmm. What do I know?
No. Well, and I think even not to explain it away, like if you, and I know there's women listening right now that have experienced panic attacks, and I know I have. And if you have never experienced them, you don't know. You just don't know. You don't know how it feels. My husband, even he experienced some in the last few years, and he was like, oh, I get it now. It is completely outside of your control. Completely comes upon you in the most random times. I loved your description of dropping the bag of rice. And then when you said, okay, the rice shouldn't be weighty enough to tip the scale. Like I was fine and then I'm not fine. I'm sitting on the floor. And you said, there is so much guilt braided into anxiety. Like, or you said there's guilt braided into anxiety. Would you just get off the floor already? Put on your pants, put yourself. It's like we've been given such a beautiful life. And then we add guilt on top of it. I remember when I felt it, it was like, I have healthy children. I have children. A lot of my friends, you know, they struggle with infertility. I have a great loving husband. We have a beautiful home. Why am I feeling this? Like as if I shouldn't. And then you add the layer of guilt on top of it. And yeah. So you saying, that you said that was so good. So good.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry that you can empathize with the panic attacks, but you're exactly right. It's just, I don't have them anymore. But I still do struggle with that guilt, I think. And maybe that's the danger of comparison because it's the underbelly and that you see all of this need around you and you're You're just almost like, what is your deal? What is your problem? Why aren't we're so mean to ourselves? You know, we really are, but it's a very, it feels selfish, you know, just in, which is just an emotion. It's just a feeling. I feel like, for me, the panic attacks also taught me that, I do have a lot of control over my life. And at the same time, there are just some physical factors that I'm given that shape me as well. And there are just some inherent things that I work through and that I do. And there are some go-to moves that I've got. And, you know, we've all been given this cert tool chest. And, for a long time, I thought mine was broken. You know, for a long time, I just thought, oh, well, I just do not have a sharp knife there. And, I think what through learning that, and first of all, so many people have panic attacks.
Yeah.
It's uncanny how when you mention it, you hear so many Me Toos.
Yes, yes. And I want that woman listening right now who has felt that to think, okay, one, that happens. And it's more for you, what it sounds like to me. And for me, it was a red flag. More than a feeling guilt that it happened. Like you said, it's a feeling. It's something our body's doing to say, something's off. There's something off. We have been able to control up to this point and had the illusion of control. And now things are happening. Has, you know, fiance with a brain tumor, husband with a brain tumor, moving to a new big city. Pace is moving faster than my body enjoys or loves. So how did you, okay, so you're in LA. This pace is fast. You're married. Marriage is normal and challenging. Take us to the next place for y'all.
So, you know, it was really this, just a series of circumstances from, you know, job loss and relational shifting. And, you know, I truly feel like God intervened in very big ways. For a small, you know, they were normal. It was aging parent, and it took someone else being sick, you know, specifically Ken's father, to see our lives like we're just right up against it. We're sometimes in so far too deep that we can't really see and a way out in any way. And it really took those series of circumstances, which I really go into the book in quite a big deal, but we decided, you know, we had two choices. We could keep living fast in LA and keep on the hamster wheel of really living very separate from our values, which I wonder sometimes if the panic attack for me was just, well, the multiple panic attacks for me was God giving me an opportunity to see something different. You know, not to dismiss it as anything heavier.
Tell me more about see something different. Sorry.
I think we needed to not only change our pace, but change the way we were viewing our pace. Because the truth is, you know, whether you live a fast life or a slow life, you can choose to live that fast life slowly, or you can choose to live that slow life quickly. And it's very, I think that we've been taught, you know, once we take ownership over our lives and that things are in our control and we are, you know, we are in charge of our circumstances and all of those things are true, but yet not, because I feel like we find ourselves in these scenarios over and over again where we're not able to control our circumstances and we ask ourselves, what now? You know, you find yourself, in over your head with, you know, four kids and Cheerios all over the floor and you're unhappy and it's what now? And can you, you know, can you rest in where your identity lies in that moment and say, these are not the circumstances today that I'm necessarily choosing in this moment. How will I react now? What happens next? And for us, that what happens next required us stripping away all of the things that we had been building, all of the success and the mountain that we were scaling and slowing down quite a bit, even to moving locations. We moved to the Midwest and, we reprioritized in a big way, and that work no longer came first for either of us. We stripped down the excess purchases, the excess things, the excess responsibilities that really, I mean, it's so funny how the American dream teaches us to, you know, buy more and spend more and acquire and decorate your home with all these couches that you don't even have time to sit on. You know, when's the last time you sat on your sofa for fun? Without the TV on, without, you know, and just connected. And it's, we're spending all of this time acquiring and styling our life the way that we want it. And we're designing our life. And I think sometimes dismissing the very design we've been given by God.
Yeah. You and I were talking, it's a good word for the woman pursuing the latter and the more and the matching the Instagram feeds and trying to be all the things. A reminder to maybe slow down, but it's also for the woman who is in the slow pace, who thinks that she should have the fast pace, that she's less than because her life doesn't look like LA, or she was born in a farm town and, you know, the classic, like, I want to get out of here and go to the big city, you know, but like you said, to embrace what the circumstances we've been given is the heart. It's the hard part. So how did you do that for you? You moved, and what else did you do? You told us you got rid of a lot of stuff.
I did. And it's funny, going through the process of slowing our lives, you know, we kind of, you do all of these outward things thinking it's going to change the insides of you, and it doesn't. You know, it really doesn't work that way. I feel like it's important to take small steps and tiny efforts, and small shifts can make big differences. But ultimately, I feel like the heart, it sometimes takes a long time for the heart to catch up with the body. So we were very much going through these motions of stripping things down and saying no to opportunities, and we turned down an HGTV show. I mean, there were big moments that we made these very intentional decisions. And then I feel better, you know? And it's that discontent, you know, it's that idea that, happiness is, cannot be the goal. You know, happiness cannot be the goal. I don't even feel like slow living can be the goal, or fast living can be the goal. Anytime that we place this attainable metric on our life, we are in danger, you know, of measuring it to a T. Life cannot be measured. It just can't. I feel like it's an art, not a science. And so it became so evident to me that happiness was not going to be an arrival point or a destination, and that it was just this everyday tangible choice I had to make to rise above my circumstances that, no, I did not choose, but I found myself in. And deciding to love and be loved anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm imagining like that big choice. I'm choosing the HGTV show, or I'm walking away from that. How was that for y'all?
Yes.
Like, I mean, in theory, it sounds great to be like, yeah, it was so easy. We just said no, but I'm sure there was a lot more struggle to it.
Well, it's funny because I knew in my gut that it was not the right opportunity. I knew I did not like the person. I'm not hardwired for the spotlight. I don't enjoy the attention. I like anonymity. I like quiet. So I knew that I would have to really be playing a role to do that. And I'm also no actress. So it just did not fit with my core. And so I knew enough by doing the online show. We knew enough to know that it would not be sustainable for me.
That's huge.
But the funny thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
It is. You have to know yourself. You really do.
That's
and the funny
exactly
thing
right.
is, I thought I would be really relieved, but I found myself second guessing that decision so many times. You know, you see somebody else get their success and you think, well, gosh, maybe if I would have powered through, I could have handled it, because that looks really fun right now.
Yeah, the Chip and Joanna life, was that could have been y'all, right?
Totally, totally, which would just, I know inherently would be the worst for me ever, but I just, you do, you go back and you second guess and you think, should I have just powered through?
Mm.
And I know in my heart that answer is no, but you do. I think by nature, we second guess. And I always go back to in Exodus when God gives us, you know, he gives his people manna. And I always think of manna, you know, in terms of time and energy and fuel and food and gosh, we get enough for today. And we only get enough for today. And just how crazy that is, how it's not, you know, we can take that manna and we can savor it and eat it slowly all day long, or we can take that manna and we can gulp it up and devour it, and we still get it tomorrow. It comes again, it returns, it's new, and we cannot save it for later. And I feel like when we talk about pace and we talk about whether we're living a slow life or a fast life and whatever that even looks like for you, because it's so different for everyone, it's not anything that we can measure and call a goal, because we're then idolizing that. You know, if we're spending all of this time pursuing, you know, KonMari or whatever, you want to only.
None of it brings me joy. And none of it brings me joy. Yes, I get you. Yeah. We're pursuing all those things.
I mean, yeah. And can it just be, I feel like, yes, there is beauty in the KonMari thing, to go off on a tangent, but it's almost as if we're just stripping away all of that, what are we going to learn? You know, I feel like I live with a toddler and a husband who are total pack rats, and my bent is toward minimalism. So it would almost be easier for me to throw away everybody's stuff, but what's that going to teach me? You know, what is that going to teach me? Gratitude for the things that I have and yet don't want? Is that going to teach me? I feel like by the process of just ripping it all away very quickly and giving it to Goodwill, it feels wasteful. It feels like we're wasting an opportunity to learn something about ourselves and to learn that, well, can we be a better wife even though the kitchen counters are a mess? Like, can we be a better mother even though we are tripping over socks again and again and again? I just, can we still rise above those circumstances and love anyway? We are missing an opportunity to learn.
There's two things going on. One is you knowing yourself well enough that this opportunity is not a match for me. And even though it could lead to this level of success, it is not worth sacrificing my soul, my family, my joy, my ultimate peace to pursue success. But then you're also saying, I know myself and what I'd like in my home and how I'd like things to be, but I'm going to set those aside a little bit and let God grow in me a little bit of gratitude for those things and a little bit of patience and a little bit of stretching of what is not my natural bent because of the relationship.
Yes. I love how you put that.
You're getting back to how well do you know yourself?
Yes. And letting yourself be a little uncomfortable, you know, like, sure. Mm. It's not comfortable for me to have a million things in my house. I don't choose that. I don't acquire personally. But when your kid brings in, you know, a bunch of leaves and puts them in her sock drawer and calls them her nature socks, that's, you know, you can't fault a four-year-old for that. That's darling. And yeah, clutter, yes, do that. That's, you're more important than this ideal that I'm pursuing. You're more important than that. And I get that you're not the same and that needs to be okay. And I feel like you're right when you said allowing God to stretch us a little, because that's, I feel like we now have every creature comfort imaginable. We have every answer. We have every, you know, human tip and life hack. And we could potentially live very comfortable lives. We already do. But then when something gets a little uncomfortable, we completely lose it because we're no longer in the practice of being uncomfortable. We're no longer in the practice of being stretched. So I want the stretching. I want to practice the everyday annoyances and the everyday rubbing of me the wrong way, so that when life gives me a very big discomfort, you know, when I lose someone important to me, when we have an aging parent or a job loss, I am in the lane and in the zone to be able to practice that. I know I have done this before on a small scale. I know how to do it. I know God is available and his love is there, and that I am loved and deeply loved and can deeply love others through that.
It makes me think of two parts of your book. I'm going to quote you to you. One is when you said, I've been working so hard. I've been working to be perfect. I've been working to please God and God's people and to be a better woman and better woman with better abs. All the things that we're trying, the word trying pops out to me a lot now, having been through recovery and recognizing where's our limit and where does God come in. But when I hear, you know, I'm trying to read my Bible and I'm trying to discipline and I'm trying, and there's so much effort. And then it also makes me think of your surfing story. And if you want, do you want to tell the surfing story?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That kind of goes along with this trying, effort, working, and relying.
Because that's what we're taught, is that work hard and your work will be rewarded. And while that's true, that makes us into completely self-reliant creatures that have nothing to rely on God for. So I learned that, and this was in the thick of my panic attacks. Just a coworker had taken me surfing when I lived in Los Angeles, and I kept just doing it wrong. I was terrible. I kept, you know, falling. And
I can't even imagine. I would never even get out there. Like, that's how fearful I am of failing. Like, I wouldn't even try. So props to you for trying.
Well, yeah, I loved the idea of being a surfer. I thought that would make me really cool, but whatever. I was truly terrible. And my friend had watched me. She had been surfing all of her life, and she watched, and she's like, what are you doing? You are trying to do this by your own efforts, but the water is there for you. Let the water do the work. It's stronger than you. Let it move and literally catch a wave. Like, you ride that wave that's already there. And it was such a metaphor for how I've been living. It was such that, truly remarkable. I feel like we only get a few conversations like that in our lives. And this wasn't even one that was, you know, tangible, but it was, yeah, that's exactly how I am living. I am doing everything in my power. I am striving. I'm striving, exhausted. I'm exhausting myself when the water that I know to be true is already here for me. And that is, it's really how I was treating God. Like, you know what? I got this. You know, you've taught me well. Thanks so much. But now I'm going to go apply. I'm going to go apply everything I learned, like the SAT essay section. And yeah, it was really, that was a little bit of a life shift for me. And I'm learning to allow God and to allow margin for him and less, you know, spend all of this time tidying up my life and controlling, because really another word for control is manipulation. You know, we're spending all this time trying to manipulate our circumstances.
Yeah, I think that control, that manipulation, it happens with our kids too. You know, we think in our own strength, I will turn them into amazing human beings.
Yeah.
And not recognizing that everything that they really need or that God wanted them to have is in them. And our job is to shape and point them and just kind of keep them on the path as much as we can. And we have a role. It's not like we just let them go be wild and crazy. We have a role to love and attach and show them God, but we can't make them into something. How have you seen this whole pacing apply to your 4.5-year-old and now new baby?
Oh gosh. Well, you know, motherhood was really hard for me in that I was so used to, I mean, I had children older. I was so used to planning everything out and controlling everything. And, you know, I was such a nice person before I had kids.
All the moms say, amen.
I was. Yes. Yeah. I felt like I was in control of my emotions and I wasn't living this reactive life. And it's funny because I would like to tell you that, and you'll find this in the book very much, but I would like to tell you after I learned all my lessons, I stopped learning them. But I found that
as if we don't keep cycling around them. Yeah, totally. Yes.
Yes.
Keep going.
After the birth of B, my first daughter, I felt lost and lacking. It was all of those old emotions that brought on the panic attacks were coming back. I felt, not worthless, but unproductive. You know, what am I doing with my life? What should I be doing? Something was off, and I fell right back into where I was. And I thought I had learned all these grand sweeping lessons, and I was self-actualized and enlightened and whatever. And then I found myself, you know, crying over Cheerios, and I just felt all of those emotions came running back. And what I did was, which was the wrong thing in my, for me and for my path, was I threw myself into another project. And I started working really long hours and searching for that worth, outside of my home, and searching for that worth in the workplace, because that was my go-to, right? That's what I had done all along. Mm-hmm. I was a great worker and I was praised there. So I went for where the praise was. And
yeah,
because you feel so invisible, I think, as a new mom. You feel so like nothing you're doing. I mean, it's a very thankless job. We all know that. So it's, mm-hmm. you feel unseen. And so I went to where I could be seen. And I remember a really late night getting takeout on my way home to feed dinner to my family. And just, there was a sign on Jimmy John's. Do you guys know like the Mexican fisherman story? Where it's,
yes. Oh my goodness. I just took a picture of it at Jimmy John's I've been wanting to share it.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's just, yes, you know, the idea is that, you know, there's a little fisherman in Mexico and a businessman comes up and is like, how many fish do you catch in a day? So, you know, feed my family, have a siesta, enjoy my wife, you know, that whole thing. And the businessman is like, well, you could totally do more, right? Like we could get you some people under you and some more boats and like you could have like an enterprise. And he's like, well, then what? And he's like, well, then you'd retire. And he's like, well, what would I do when I retire? And he's like, he realized that the same thing he would do when he's retired is what he can do now, which is a little bit of work, enjoy your family, have a siesta, whatever. I realized, oh my gosh, like I've tipped the scale into this place of more searching for worth that I already had. You know, my worth and my identity is rooted in God. So what am I looking for exactly? What if I just choose to, instead of chasing this idea of, you know, more money, more accolades, more fame, what if I'm just okay with the little bit that I have now, the enough that I have, the manna for today, and just love the people that I've already been given? You know, why look for more things when I've been given so much already? What if I shift my focus onto what I already have? And it was a change. I remember coming home and with my little number four sub, and I'm like, all right, what if, you know, what if I sell this? It was a project. It was a new website I had built. And I'm like, all right, Ken, can we afford to sell this site? And his response was, can we afford not to sell this site? You know, you're just,
wow.
Essentially you're a wreck. So since then, you know, I have really been very intentional about, home has been my focus. Children has been my focus. And that's okay. You know, I feel like it takes making that mistake. It's so easy to learn from others and to be like, well, okay, it didn't work for you, but it takes you making that mistake. It takes you pouring yourself into something else to realize, okay, I've tipped the scale and now I got to kind of move back a little bit.
Yeah, it is. Someone listening could say, well, you know, maybe Aaron couldn't make it work, but I'm doing just fine. I'm doing just fine. And really the heart of it is the productivity isn't the heart. There are lots of women around the world being very productive and doing a lot of things in third world countries and enjoying their families. But the heart of it is the American woman who's doing it for worth, like you said. It's not coming from a place of, I need to do this for my family or I am productive because that's just part of our culture. It is, I need you to tell me I'm amazing.
Yes.
Otherwise, I can't just sit here and not be amazing. I can't.
Totally. And you want to do something that you're good at. And I really thought I was a bad mom. I thought I wasn't a good mom at the beginning. You know, I had all of these expectations and I was feeling on every day. You know, I could not, you know, rein in my impatience and my imperfections. And I think we're hardwired to want to do things well. And so I thought, well, hey, if I'm not a good mom, I know I'm good at this. Maybe I should just go back to doing this and let, you know, my husband, who was actually a fantastic father, maybe I should just like let him take over. You know,
said it so many times. You're really good at this. You should just stay home all day.
I know.
I told my husband. Yeah. He's like, Heather, I couldn't do it all day. I said, well, that's how I feel. So what is your new definition of being a good mom? What do you think a good mom is now that you've kind of released?
Well, I always tell my daughter there are no good kids. There are kids that make good choices. So I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to offer myself that same grace and say there are no good moms, but there are moms that make good choices. And I think some of those good choices that I'm making are really just being available to my kids, being visible, being present, letting them see my eyes, you know, like looking at them, I'm pretty rigid on the phone thing. I keep my phone far away pretty much at all times. Mm-hmm. My friends hate me for it because they can never reach me, but I have strict, and I think that just comes from, I had two working parents who, were incredible in so many ways. But were not as available to me as other parents. I thought as other parents of the kids growing up that were. And so that's just my own stuff. You know, that's just something that I really value, that I want my kids to see that they can come and be with me, that's okay. So yeah, I mean, that's a big one I'm working on in the moment.
That is so good. I think it's helpful. Just the messaging that's going out now from women who have achieved quote unquote success, or they've risen to the top, and almost like Solomon to say, meaningless, you know, just that isn't the goal for us, the younger women coming up behind you who are starting off with young kids. And there's this extra pressure, I think, in the millennial generation to do something that matters, and that you can present the message that being a mom matters, being a fully present mom matters, staying off your phone matters, that it may not look like it. You may not get the outside approval or acceptance, but in your soul, you can feel like this is where I find peace and joy, is making this good choice for our family.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I think too, I mean, definitely that we've all heard the pressures that women can have it all and should and shouldn't. But having it all is very, that is exactly what it is. It is, you have it all, you have every emotion, you feel every responsibility, every burden. I mean, a lot of responsibility comes with having it all. And if that is the trajectory, then understand that is the good and the bad. You know, it's not just have all the good things. It is, that's a lot for someone to take on. I am not built for the having it all. I don't want the having it all, but I do want to have enough. And the good news is we've already been given enough.
That is the good news. Amazing grace.
Yes.
Like you said, that saved your life. And I know you have so many, you know, tips and help as women are starting off a new year, and they're just a little bit realizing that the discontent or the anxiety or something is triggering. They're saying it's off. I want to break up with my life. I don't like this pace that I've set for myself. And they have the option to do a shift. Maybe they don't have an option to change their job, that is a part of their family structure, but maybe they have a shift in their heart, and spending some time with God. And I know your book can help them find God in those everyday rhythms and getting quiet in their faith and he's going to help you.
Amen. I think too, sometimes I remember having this mini existential crisis a couple years ago where I texted a friend and I'm like, my life looks nothing like Jesus. And, you know, she said, well, do one thing today that does look like what Jesus' life looked like. Just one thing, you know, just do one thing. And that was really great advice for me at the time. Like just when you can't make a grand sweeping change, there is so much in the small. There really is. And it builds on it. And I think God works on, I mean, God, you know, takes our 2 cents and he takes our loaves and fishes and it multiplies. It's uncanny and unbelievable. And I feel like our doubting little hearts are like, whatever, what's 5 minutes sitting down in the quiet, you know, with an open Bible going to do, but holy moly, it does everything. It's life changing.
It's a step. You have to change one step in a pace. Otherwise you just keep going. And
right.
Sometimes we think, like you said, it's too small. Small is big when you're racing. Small is big.
Yes.
Okay, where can people find you online? I know you said at the beginning, but tell everyone again where they can find you in this book.
Yes. So my blog is designedformankind.com. And I'm always on, not always, sometimes on Instagram. I'm just Erin Lochner at Instagram and Twitter. And then the book is out January 10th. You can find it at any major bookstore, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I'm so excited to send it out.
It's a good one. Y'all,
thank you.
It is absolutely beautiful. So well designed. I mean, I guess when you have the designer in your name, there's a little bit of pressure to to make a well-designed book. But I'm telling y'all, I get a lot of books in the mail, and no book that I've received resembles this book.
It is different
from every other single one. I even like how you did the chapters with the 00. I mean, every little part of it is just, I don't know. I can go on and on. I could go on and on. It is such a gift. So thank you for the time and energy you put into helping us all choose the pace that God has for us.
Amen. Thank you so much, Heather. Thank you for having me.
It was my pleasure, Miss Erin. You go have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the God-Centered Mom Podcast. If you're looking for more resources on how to replace me with he, go to godcenteredmom.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guest. I want you to really understand and know that God is just as present while you are washing dishes at your kitchen sink as while you are worshiping him in a church pew. He sees your service to your family and he is pleased. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Have a great day.